And we're back in the Radio Cafe. I'm Hollis Walker, sitting in for Mary Charlotte today. My guest for the second half of the show is John Davis. John is director of the Low Residency MFA in Creative Writing at the Institute of American Indian Arts here in Santa Fe. He's the author of 4 chapbooks and 3 full-length collections of poetry. He's been honored with the Lannan Literary Award, quite a big deal in poetry, and many other awards. And he is the Poet Laureate of Santa Fe. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Hollis.
Thanks for being on the show.
That's good to be here.
What does being the Poet Laureate involve?
Well, promoting poetry in a number of ways. Uh-huh. I've done a series. I'm in the middle of a series of 6 readings that we'll talk about today. I've done 2 workshops in the last 2 weeks, 2 Saturday workshops at the libraries. I write a column for the Santa Fe Reporter once a month, and that one of those comes out tomorrow. And I'm on the radio.
So when people, you're also obviously a teacher. When people ask you at a cocktail party, what do you do, John? What do you say? Do you say I'm a poet?
It's a long answer. Yeah, I usually say I direct the MFA program because I'm all about promotion these days and uh-huh. getting the word out because it's a brand new program. We're in our second semester. So I usually start with that just for practical matters. But, yeah, right after that, it'll be a poet. If my partner introduces me, she always says he's a poet.
Uh-huh.
So that's nice.
And then what do people say back to that?
Depends where I am. I remember I was at one party and a friend of mine introduced me as a poet, and the guy he introduced me to said, yeah, everybody's a poet. Which was a little disconcerting, and then he had to follow him around saying, no, I mean, he's really a poet. He has books. He's he's good. So I get that sometimes. Everybody's a poet. Sometimes people are interested. Sometimes it doesn't have any meaning, depending on where I am.
Yeah, I think the distinction is professional poet.
Yeah, I hate to professionalize it, but I'd like to say dedicated poet, or there should be a word for the kind of. I was talking to a workshop of older people who probably don't have 20 years to practice, and I was saying. That when you're learning how to write poetry, like the first 20 years, and they all looked at me with their mouths a little open, like, the first 20 years learning how to write poetry? But anyway, something like that. Yeah.
Right. It is a skill. It is an art skill. So right. It has that sense of learning that right. becoming a painter does. Or,
yeah, exactly.
Or becoming a musician. That right. it is something you build on. It's not just something that you can sit down and do perfectly the first time.
Right.
Yeah. So
right.
tell us about the reading tomorrow night.
Well, we're reading at the Santa Fe Community Gallery, which is in the Convention Center, because a lot of people don't know it's there. And it'll be at 6 o'clock. The press release said 5 o'clock in the body and 6 o'clock in the title. It is at 6 o'clock. I'll be reading. It's the 4th of a series of 6 readings. And I'll be reading with 5 other poets. Carol Moldau was supposed to read with us, but she's been replaced by a guy named Robin McGowan, who I met at a reading a couple of weeks ago. He gave me his books, and I really liked them. And so I just invited him to substitute for Carol Moldau.
So you pick up poets at cocktail parties.
Yeah, right, yeah. So he said he was a poet. He handed me the books. Turned out he was.
Great.
Yeah.
See, now you're so famous that other people are handing you their books.
Right, yeah. That's great, yeah.
And who else is going to read
you? Maymay Bursenbrugge, mm-hmm. Who's a very interesting poet, a very experimental poet. I think her poetry seems difficult to people, but to me it makes makes sense. So maybe I'll read one of her poems in a while and talk about that. Valerie Martinez, who was the second Santa Fe Poet Laureate. James Thomas Stevens, who I teach with at the Institute of American Indian Arts. Elaine Upton, another Santa Fe poet. And Robin McGowan, who just got added to the lineup.
It sounds like a lot of fun. And it's free, right?
It's free, yeah.
And these are professional poets, yeah. All of them.
Yeah. I mean, I've mixed it up in terms of levels. Like some people have been writing for 20, 30 years, and some mm-hmm. people have been writing for a shorter mm-hmm. time. And that's really been the exciting thing. Some of the poets I've had, I knew their work, but I hadn't heard them read. And that was, for me, that was the best experience.
It's always different to hear someone read their own poetry. Why don't you read us something of your own?
I'll read something of my own. This is actually, I've been asked a lot about writing poetry, and so I've had to think a lot about how I do it. But this is called Ars Venatica, which means the art of hunting, right? The harrier. But it's really Ars Poetica, a poem about how I sometimes write poetry. Ars Venatica, the harrier. Wings upswept to stop the endless rising, spread wide to stall the sudden drop. I should say the harrier, for those who don't know, and I'll start the poem over, is used to be called a marsh hawk. Yeah, it's a beautiful, they fly more like butterflies than hawks. You can see the wind, you can see the shape of the wind that they're using to fly. It's very effortless flight. So I'll start again. Wings upswept to stop the endless rising, spread wide to stall the sudden drop. He flies nowhere, everywhere at once, a hollow bird blown up on shafts of wind. This dance of everything with feathers and flecks, this sensible drift, this stillness at the core of motion, even his call is half query, half wind. He shuns the shadowed junipers, startles the reckless vole, hunts best by pretending not to hunt. Wafting among the willows, he plies the seam where wind meets wind. Wings luffing, curling, buffeted, they carve an edge almost but not quite willed. So when he falls, it seems just that, a fall. A kite broke loose, he is, blown down half sideways in the sage, limp gopher like an afterthought tangled in his claws.
Wow, thank you. Would you, I'd like to ask you, we've got the blender in the background here at the cafe for a moment. I'd like to ask you just to read those very first lines again.
Okay.
Just those first two stanzas, just so we can, it's so hard to hear a poem the first time through.
Right.
Yeah. we're hoping the blender will stop, but maybe not.
It's a little softer now. Wings upswept to stop the endless rising, spread wide to stall the sudden drop. He flies nowhere, everywhere at once, a hollow bird blown up on shafts of wind.
Hmm. Thank you. Your writing is so visual. The images just, they just sort of waft together as you read, as the poem goes along, and we can see that hawk.
Right.
Quite nice.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite birds.
You write a lot about nature, actually.
I don't call myself a birder because I don't count and I don't list, but I'm a bird watcher.
Uh-huh.
And since I was, when I was 2 years old, a junco flew into the cellar window in the house I lived in, New Haven, Connecticut, and my older brother brought it in, and it was dead, or apparently dead. But while he was holding it, it came back to life, and so it was this kind of amazingly magical experience that I've never forgotten, and since then birds have been magical.
Yeah, and so metaphoric, great for metaphor.
Right.
Yeah. Why is poetry important? The Cliff's Notes. I know you could teach a whole class on that, right?
Actually, those basic questions I try to skip over. I do a workshop in poetry, and I never say what it is we're doing. There are a lot of important things in the world. Poetry is one of them. For me, poetry... someone asked me that up in Taos last Saturday, and Carol Moldau talked about writing to kind of understand herself and her world, and I do that. But being the wise guy that night, I also said that it just makes my bafflement richer and more beautiful to write and read poetry.
Well, to me, poetry is more symbolic and more imagistic mm-hmm. than most forms of writing. And so it forces us into a different mindset, a mm-hmm. different way of looking at things, just this very same way that looking at a great painting does,
right.
or hearing a symphony does. Yeah. It takes us out of our rationalistic, you know, very rigid, structured way of thinking most of the time. And so we went on that flight with that Harrier. Or you know, I felt myself standing on the ground looking at it as you described what it was doing. And so for me, that's why it's important.
Right.
Yeah.
For me, it occupies... I mean, you're exactly right. For me, it occupies... It's closer to painting and music than it
yes.
is to the other literary
the
arts
other,
for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. So I was going to ask you if about your upcoming books. You've got mm-hmm. a couple of interesting projects going on.
I suddenly have many, yes. Let's start with the Palace Press. Tom Leach down at the Palace Press is, and this is really exciting to me, there's a poem called Loving Horses in my last book.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I read, that's the poem that everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tom is going to do I woke up one morning, I said, we have to do some sort of project with the letterpress down at Palace Press. And I was thinking about it, and then I just woke up one morning and said, oh, we need to do that poem. That's Santa Fe's favorite poem from the book. So,
uh-huh.
So he's going to do a chapbook version of it in which the poem spread over 10 pages, I think. It's,
uh-huh.
it's a longish poem. And then the poem mentions the Muybridge, the photographs of Edward
yes.
Muybridge
mm-hmm.
of the horses in action.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to do I think the inner covers are going to have Muybridge horses mm-hmm. running on them.
Muybridge was an early photographer
right.
who was the first person to successfully document, I think I'm correct in saying this, motion
mm-hmm.
Through photography.
Right.
And there's a very famous series of pictures of a horse galloping.
Right.
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 Yeah.
And yeah, everybody had thought that a horse that size had to have at least one foot on the ground at all times while
right.
it galloped. And it turned out they didn't.
They didn't. They were actually floating
yeah.
above the ground.
So that's one project. Oh, I didn't know if you wanted to do that.
No, please tell me about the others. Yeah.
And then a press, the Banana Creek Press down in Nacogdoches, Texas, is going to do an art book with. I've been writing as other people for a while, so we're going to take 13 of the people I write as, the characters I've invented, and artists are going to create the poets from the work and the biography. They're going to do portraits of non-existent poets.
So you write poems from the character of imaginary people in your consciousness.
Right.
Yeah, and they're all poets.
They're all poets.
Yes, so mm-hmm. how interesting. So and have you been treated for this? No, I'm teasing.
I'm trying to reintegrate, yes.
And, you know, it's interesting because I didn't know that as I was reading your last book of poetry, but you do write in many different forms and from about many different things, like I did mention, and you read this nature poem, but you also write very personal poetry. You've written a lot about your father.
Mm-hmm.
You write about death or the mm-hmm. idea of death. So you're kind of all over the place.
Yeah. I actually, for my last book, Preliminary Report, I stole back about 5 poems that were written by other characters.
Uh-huh.
And they were too good, so I took them back.
I'm talking with John Davis, who is Santa Fe's Poet Laureate. He's doing a reading tomorrow night, a free reading at the Santa Fe Community Gallery, which is at the city's convention center downtown on Marcy Street. And numerous other poet friends of his will be reading as well. It'll be a great opportunity to hear some really, really wonderful poetry. John, would you like to read us another piece?
Yeah, I'll read one. I was going to read poems by the others, but I just realized I can't read all of them, and I don't want to read some of them.
Okay.
So I guess I'll read. I'll read this. I've been reading this poem a lot called Solstice. I actually wrote it. It was an assignment for a solstice party.
Mm.
And so it's called Solstice. I would like to say this night is Annunciation, that the waning moon floats the winter sky, a wafer of light on a tongue of darkness. Or tell you how my father once, legend has it, pissed in the gas tank of a 39 Ford and rattled the last miles home. But who knows where this particular darkness will take us, smuggling us in a willow basket across the snowy fields, while Orion grabs with one strong arm three rabbits by the ears, with the other hoists an armful of kindling and plods steadily across the sky. I meant to tell you to breathe deeply, meant to say, I'll be back, in darkness or light, meant to say, we'll lay a fire, roast these mealy rabbits, and sing at the end of this short day a song about light, how it comes again, untended, regardless, hands out in supplication, asking forgiveness for being itself, for being a disturbance of air between the wings of night, for promising us so much that darkness finally delivers.
Thank you so much, John. What was the name of that?
Solstice.
I was very much struck in those very first lines by the description of the moon as a wafer of light.
Light on a tongue of darkness.
Yeah, beautiful. That's so wonderful.
Yeah, sometimes a line like that happens often in my work, like maybe four or five lines down. And that kind of triggers the whole rest of the poem. It becomes the kind of the way in, the door into the poem.
How when you write a poem, how much do you rewrite? Is that a never-ending process?
Yeah, there's no good answer. Excuse me. Sometimes I don't rewrite at all, and sometimes I rewrite 20, 30 times. And for me, a lot of times I rewrite poems that don't ever quite work. Because for me, I always think of rewriting as I play basketball, not well, but often. And and I, you know, when I'm practicing, it's really, it's like revising a poem that's not quite working is practicing in the gym so that I can get it right when it's game time.
Yeah, one of my friends who's a writer calls that sharpening my pencil.
Yeah, same kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, so not every poem makes it into a book.
Right, yeah.
Who do you, what poets do you really love?
Many.
Well, let's talk just about contemporary poets. And just name, you know, two or three. They don't have to be your favorites with a capital F.
Well, Robert Haas has been a touchstone for me for a while.
The former poet laureate
of the United States. Yeah. And then he became a fan of mine, which was nice. And so Haas is big, and then Jory Graham. There's a set of books that were really important to me by her, her second and third books especially. And then mostly I it's not contemporary poets that influence me. It's Wallace Stevens and Federico Garcia Lorca. A Chilean poet named Nicanor Parra was very important to me. Pablo Neruda. Sylvia Plath continues to be big.
Do you have a large library of poetry?
I do. Yeah, it's the wall of the living room. One wall is
nearly
all poetry.
How many poetry books do you buy a month?
Yeah. I don't buy very many, but somehow...
They come to
I'm
you.
Old. I'm old. 40 years of buying poetry. They add up.
Yeah. So maybe read us another poem.
Okay, now for something completely different.
Yeah, read one of the I was very interested in your prose forms.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, because the last couple of poems you've read to us were structured poems and with a meter, so to speak, right? And but you write a lot of poems that are actually prose poems.
Right. Yeah. So this is just a poem about dinner. Every year I go to the Associated Writing Programs conference. And then I see all my friends, and we have dinner. And this was about an especially expensive dinner. I could have bought a car for what we paid for dinner, I think. And I needed a car. But this is called Self-Portrait with a Goat. And so it's a totally different language from the others, and it's a prose poem. So it moves. It doesn't stop very often. Self-Portrait with Goat. Begin with a vortex, anodyne, and grave, apocalypse of bleats, blur of vexations, add a waiter. a provisioner of meats, hawker of sides, slosher in the tidal rush. Then let the chef decide. For she will decree unkempt salads, olives warm as tongues, dapper oysters adrift in their ragged boats, pork bellies, baby octopi, escargot ravioli like letters from a secret lover. Then she will initiate the order of the goat. It will settle table words serenely amidst the ruckus and folderol. It will induct in the night. It will command an audience, commend itself thusly. It will shred easily to the tendered fork, make even vegetarians dream of rocky hillsides the steep ascent. Orbited by minions and by minions consumed, a brief for friendship, a prolegomena for poetry, this conspiracy near midnight, this vaunting of the heretofore unvaunted, this cataleptic and tenderest night.
Say that again, the last
cataleptic
one.
And tenderest night.
Cataleptic and tenderness night. What, cataleptic?
I can't even remember what it means. It sounds good.
Oh, I love that, because I have to say, as I read through your book, there were some words I had to go to the dictionary for. I love the line in that one, the dapper oysters asleep in their little boats, or something like that.
The dapper oysters adrift in their ragged boats.
Adrift in their ragged boats.
Yeah, ragged boats.
What a beautiful
shells,
vision of the shell that holds the oyster. So you're inspired by, what inspires you, besides goat at a fancy restaurant?
Right. Email. I've discovered I've written about 20 poems from this book in emails to my friends. So
you've written poems in emails?
Right. I'll start writing a conventional communicative email, and suddenly something will happen, and I'll end up writing a poem.
So do you type when you write your poetry?
There's no rule.
Yeah.
Everybody always asks me what my process is, and I say, oh, my poems don't proceed, they occur.
Uh-huh.
And to a certain extent, every poem comes from a different place in a different way. So sometimes I'm driving, and I'm writing with one hand.
Just scribbling something on a scrap of paper in the seat next to you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And sometimes I'm sitting at a computer. Sometimes I have a notebook, and sometimes I'm out walking, and it happens.
Uh-huh. You need a little digital recorder. You can carry.
I've done that.
You have?
Yeah, the iPhone is good for that. Uh-huh. Sometimes I just type a few words into that little notes thing. So,
yes.
Whatever works.
Sometimes people, when I teach writing classes, that's always a question that comes up: do you write by hand or do you type on a computer?
Yeah.
You know, so
everything.
Yeah, I had to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything about the program that you run at IAIA?
It's been really exciting. It's been really kind of exhausting. We started last February 15th. We were accredited, and we accepted our first class April 15th, and we started the program the end of July.
John's talking about a new program at the Institute for American Indian Arts. It's a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, right?
Right, yeah. Background information would be good. Yeah, it's a low residency program, which means all the students come for 1 week.
Uh-huh.
We have this crazy literary gathering. It's really intense. It starts at 8:30 in the morning, and it goes till 8:30 at night, 12 hours a day for 7 days. And we have visiting writers, and the faculty read, and student readings, and workshops every day, and craft talks. And then they go off on their own, and for 16 weeks they do the semester online. And then they come back again at the beginning of the next semester.
And what do they write? What forms are taught? Do they have to learn how to write in all forms? Or?
No, they specialize in one. They can add a second form or try out another form along the way. And the afternoon workshops are open to there are various genres, and anyone can go to them, so they get that experience too. But they have to specialize in one.
And what percentage of your students are Native American?
Right now, the first class is about 75%.
Uh-huh.
The second class is just majority Native, just slightly majority Native. So you don't have to be Native to go there. You just have to want to study with our particular faculty. That's what I tell everyone.
Yes,
if you want to study with them, come.
Yeah. You must have groupies now.
Groupies.
people who are coming to this program because they want to study with you or other faculty members.
Well, I'm not teaching actually in it.
Oh.
It's the directorship is overwhelming, but I'm a presence there. I'm always there, and I and the faculty I handpicked, and I, you know, they're, you know, so it filters down. The culture is probably created by me, but I'm not teaching directly in the program. Uh-huh. But we do have Sherman Alexis. Yeah. A lot of people might know. We have Joseph Boyden, another well-known author in Canada and becoming more and more well-known in this country. We have Sherwin Bitsui and Natalie Diaz and Joan Kane as poets, and the screenwriter from Winter in the Blood teaches for us. So we have poetry, fiction, screenwriting, and creative nonfiction.
Nice. So before we run out of time here, will you read one more short poem?
One more short poem.
If you can find one in your pile there. I've been talking with John Davis, who is going to be giving a talk tomorrow, April 16th, with other local poets who will be reading from their work at the Santa Fe Community Gallery downtown. That's located in the Convention Center. Reading with John will be Maymay Bursenberger, Valerie Martinez, James Thomas Stevens, Elaine Upton, and James McGraw? Yes.
Robin McGowan.
Robin McGowan, sorry.
The latest edition. So since you were talking about bullying and the adolescence in the first part, okay. this is a poem called Adolescence, not necessarily about bullying, but about how difficult adolescence can be. For the lucky, it's years spent spinning the frantic wheel of a carnival bumper car, lights swirling, the buzzing and rumbling, sparking and zapping, intent only on causing the surprising crash, the ram and counter-ram, spun wheel, sudden surge, in reverse, the steady stare down, head jerk, one car after another until you find yourself targeting the bare legs of the college kid, his back turned to unstick a clot of stuck cars bearing down, full speed now, the humming in your head now until the power dies and you stop dead at his sneakered feet and smile primly up.
That was John Davis, Poet Laureate of Santa Fe.